titled the lesson this morning, Whoever Desires to Love Life. I'd like for you to just think about that phrase for a moment. And I'll just ask you a question that is meant to be rhetorical. Who here desires to love life? I think if I asked you to raise your hand, everybody here would have their hand in the air. The desire to love life might be the most fundamental desire that every human being shares. I'm not sure that there's anybody in the world who doesn't want to be happy. Even people who are very bitter, people who live in very bitter kinds of mindsets, I think that their bitterness comes from this unfulfilled desire to be happy. That deep down, that's what everybody wants, and that's something that we share with every human being on the face of the earth. That might be where our commonalities end. You might think that one thing will make you happy, and I might think that another thing will make me happy, and we might have very different ideas about how to pursue happiness, but I would posit that everybody wants to be happy. All of us want to love the life that we live. So the question this morning is, what is the Christian perspective to that desire? How should we pursue loving life? And I'd like to start with 1 Peter chapter 3, verses 10 through 12. This is really going to be the focus of the lesson this morning. These verses here, 1 Peter 3, verses 10 through 12. He writes, "For whoever desires to love life and see good days, let him keep his tongue from evil and his lips from speaking deceit. Let him turn away from evil and do good. Let him seek peace and pursue it. For the eyes of the Lord are on the righteous, and his ears are open to their prayer, but the face of the Lord is against those who do evil." And so this is the kind of language that Peter uses. He says, whoever desires to love life and see good days. I'd like for us to think about what he tells us here and really put it in the context of the rest of this letter of 1 Peter. But what we will try to answer is how to love life and see good days. We'll consider what a happy life is made of, how to pursue it, and the most important ingredient of all. So that's the lesson this morning. And so first, let's talk about what makes life happy. And in order to see that, I think that we need to see these verses in their context. You might notice that verse 10 begins with this little word, for, and that's important. Because what Peter's doing is he's actually citing from Psalm 34 to make a point that concludes an entire section. And the section goes back all the way to chapter 2 and verse 13. Starting in chapter 2 and verse 13, Peter is giving us a lot of practical instruction about how to live in various relationships. And in chapter 2, verses 13 through 17, he focuses on how we relate to our government. He talks about being subject to every human institution, whether it's to the emperor or to governors. And then in verses 18 through 25, he moves on to a relationship that he addresses to servants. He talks about how servants should relate to their masters. And so we find some practical instruction there for us about how we relate to our employers or how we function in the workplace. And then in chapter 3, he gives us instruction about marriage. He addresses wives in chapter 3 in verse 1, and then he addresses husbands in chapter 3 in verse 7. And then he addresses all of our relationships in chapter 3 verses 8 through 9. He says, "Finally, all of you have unity of mind, sympathy, brotherly love, a tender heart, and a humble mind. Do not repay evil for evil or reviling for reviling, but on the contrary, bless, for to this you were called, that you may obtain a blessing." And then verse 10 says, "For whoever desires to love life and see good days, this is the instruction that he gives. And so notice that the section that verses 10 through 12 conclude is this section that's all about relationships. It's about our relationship with our government, our relationship with our employers, our relationship with our spouses, our relationships with everyone. And then Peter uses this quote from Psalm 34 as his proof text. Why does he do that? Well, I think it's because life is really all about relationships. Just think about that for a moment. If you were to write an autobiography, if you were to tell the story of your life, how would you go about doing that? It would probably include things like where you lived, you know, what your experiences were like, the things that you did, the things that you accomplished. But when you really get down to it, all of those things are really just details, aren't they? Because the story of your life is really the story of your relationships. It's the relationship that you had with your parents or with your siblings. It's the relationships that you had with your friends or your coworkers. We are deeply social creatures. And not to get on a side trail, but I think the reason why is because we are created in the image of God. And God is three persons in one. And so we are deeply social creatures. We are made for social interactions. We are designed for relationships. And that is what constitutes the life that we live. It's relationships. And if you don't believe me, just think about the three relationships that Peter talks about, starting in chapter 2 and verse 13. Does your relationship with your government have any impact at all on your happiness? If it didn't, you wouldn't have voted last week. I'll just ask you, how did you feel when the results came back? Either you stayed up Tuesday night or you read the headlines on Wednesday. Some of you might have felt happy. Some of you might have not felt very happy, but either way, you cared about that. Most likely, you cared to some degree. And I think the reason why we care about politics is because we want to have a government that aligns with our beliefs and with our interests. It makes us happy when we feel like our government is on the same page as us, and it makes us unhappy when we feel like it's not. Think about the second relationship that he talks about, the relationship of servants and masters. What about the relationships that you have at work? Do those have any impact at all on your happiness? I've got to say, I've had some jobs that I have really hated before. When I was in college, I worked at a grocery store in the summers, and I worked in the produce department of that grocery store. And the produce department manager was terrible. He was selfish, he was lazy, he was crude, he was annoying. I dreaded clocking in when he was on the clock too. I think we've all probably had experiences like that at work. There are also jobs that I've had that I've enjoyed, and those jobs were typically jobs that I enjoyed because I worked with people that I liked being around. I looked forward to going into work the next week. What about your marriage relationship? That's the third relationship that Peter talks about in 1 Peter. Does the quality of your marriage relationship have any impact at all on your happiness? Of course it does. It has a profound effect. You know, if you are in a good place with your spouse, if you feel like you're getting along and you understand each other and it's pleasant, you know, it feels like everything is pleasant. It feels like all of life is good. But if you have a bad relationship with your spouse, you know, you feel like you're constantly butting heads with each other, there's friction, there's annoyance, it feels like your whole life is dark and gloomy. I really like this quote from a book called The Meaning of Marriage. It was written by Tim Keller. He said, "Marriage has the power to set the course of your life as a whole. If your marriage is strong, even if all the circumstances in your life around you are filled with trouble and weakness, it won't matter. You will be able to move out into the world in strength. However, if your marriage is weak, even if all the circumstances in your life around you are marked by success and strength, it won't matter. You will move out into the world in weakness." What's the point? Well, the point, I think, is that if you want to love your life, you would be wise to invest in your relationships. Relationships is really what life is made of. If you neglect them, then nothing else will matter. No amount of money or success or popularity or accomplishment is more valuable than warm and healthy relationships. Nobody ever regretted spending more time with their family and less time at the office. And we would be wise to understand that sooner. Relationships are the stuff that real life is made of. And so whoever desires to love life and see good days will invest in relationships. And so the question then is, how do we do that? How do we pursue happiness in good relationships in life? And Peter gives us lots of good practical advice about how to cultivate good relationships. If we go back to chapter 2, verses 13 and 14, just notice the advice that he gives us about how to have a good relationship with your government. He says, "Be subject for the Lord's sake to every human institution, whether it be to the emperor as supreme or to governors as sent by him, to punish those who do evil and to praise those who do good." I appreciated Bernie's prayer this morning, where he mentioned that it's a privilege that we get to vote for our leaders in this country. That doesn't mean we always get the ones that we want. But whether or not we have the leaders that we want, Peter tells us, be subject to them. We don't need to be people who are rebellious, people who are causing problems. What about in the second relationship? In verse 18, he says, "Servants, be subject to your masters with all respect, not only to the good and gentle, but also to the unjust." If you want to have a good relationship with the person you work for, show respect to him. Not because he necessarily deserves it, but because that will work to make a better relationship than if you were causing problems and being disrespectful. And then when he talks about the marriage relationship in chapter 3, verse 1 says, "Wives, be subject to your own husbands, so that even if some do not obey the word, they may be won without a word by the conduct of their wives when they see your respectful and pure conduct." Down in verse 7, to husbands, he says, "Live with your wives in an understanding way, showing honor to the woman as the weaker vessel, since they are heirs with you of the grace of life, so that your prayers may not be hindered." There's a lot that we could say about this, but notice that what he's instructing husbands and wives to do is to esteem one another as better than themselves, to think about each other's interest and not just their own. And then when he talks about all of our relationships in verses 8 and 9, he says that they should be characterized by unity of mind, sympathy, brotherly love, a tender heart, a humble mind. It's not repaying evil for evil or reviling for reviling. It's not responding to wrongdoing with wrongdoing, but it's seeking peace. And that's why when he gets to his proof text in verses 10 through 12, He says, whoever desires to love life and see good days, let him keep his tongue from evil and his lips from speaking deceit. Let him turn away from evil and do good. Let him seek peace and pursue it. Do you notice what Peter is saying should be true in all of our relationships? He's saying that we ought to be people who are peacemakers. That's what we've been called to be. Not people who seek to insult and divide and constantly cause problems, but people who seek to bless and unify and let others see the character of Christ in us. And so if you want to love life, if you want to see good days, if you want to enjoy the life that you have, if you want to be happy, then seek happy relationships. Be honest with people. Don't deceive them. Don't manipulate them. Don't hurt people or take advantage of them. The pursuit of happiness is really the pursuit of peace. And it reminds me a lot of what Jesus said would be true of the citizens of the kingdom of heaven. Remember in Matthew chapter 5 and verse 9, he said, "Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called sons of God." And I'll just point out that he doesn't say, "Blessed are the peace lovers," or "Blessed are the peace," or "Blessed are the peace preferers." He says, "Blessed are the peace makers." It's not enough for us to just sort of wish that people would get along, but we need to be people who are actively pursuing that kind of peace in relationships. And I will say that this does include what you post on Facebook. You know, you're not immune just because you typed it instead of said it. We need to be people who are seeking peace and pursuing it. And what Peter is helping us to understand is that this is just wise. This is just good. If we understand that real life is made of relationships, then if we want to have a good life, if we want to have happiness, then we need to pursue peaceful relationships, not living in constant irritableness. You know, sometimes we stab ourselves in the back, shoot ourselves in the foot. You know, we're constantly our own worst enemies because if we fail to get along with people and we're always looking for reasons to be annoyed with people, then no wonder we don't love life and we live in misery. I like what Psalm 133 says about this. Psalm 133, verses 1 through 3, this is a psalm of ascents. And so this would be a psalm that the people of Israel would sing as they went up to worship in Jerusalem. And it says, "Behold how good and pleasant it is when brothers dwell in unity. It is like the precious oil on the head, running down on the beard of Aaron, running down on the collar of his robes. It is like the dew of Hermon, which falls on the mountains of Zion. For there the Lord has commanded the blessing, life forevermore." So David says, behold how good and pleasant it is when brothers dwell in unity. That reminds me of the song that I asked Brian to lead for us. How sweet, how heavenly is the sight when those that love the Lord in one another's peace delight and so fulfill the word. It is good and it is pleasant when brothers dwell in unity. And it's not good and it's not pleasant when they don't. But David illustrates this in verse 2 by talking about oil being poured on Aaron's head, running down his beard. Isn't that just a lovely picture? Like if I had a cup of oil and I just poured it on top of my head and it just dripped down my beard onto my shirt collar, wouldn't we all say, like, yeah, that's gorgeous? You know, it seems a little strange to us. But what David's doing is he's referencing Aaron being anointed to be priest in Leviticus chapter 8. In Leviticus 8, he was anointed with oil on the top of his head. And the idea, I think, is that that would have been a wonderful occasion for the people of Israel. That they would have all been able to look to their high priest and experience the blessing of unity. We're all together in this. We are all a united people. He is our high priest. And it's sort of like as that oil flowed down his head onto his beard from the top to the bottom, he was covered in this soothing, fragrant oil. And unity is kind of like that. That when we can live in harmony with others, we are covered with pleasantness. Verse 3 really illustrates the point in a different way. Mount Hermon is a mountain to the north of Israel, and it is the highest mountain in the land. And so the land of Israel is filled with a lot of wilderness. It's often dry and parched and scrubby, but high up on Mount Hermon is well known for being covered in thick dew. It's lush and it's green. And as that water would flow from the top of the mountain, it would run down in little brooks and springs. It would unite the blessings at the top with the bottom. And so again, it's a picture of the blessedness of unity. And I think that the very basic point here for us is that unity is desirable. Peace is desirable. It's pleasant not to be fighting with people. And if we're wise, that's something that we're going to pursue. Okay, so here's the thing. If we understand this, that peaceful relationships are really powerful, and that good life is filled with pleasant, peaceful relationships, you might think, well, what do I do when I don't really have much control over those? And in fact, Romans chapter 12 and verse 18 tells us that there are times when we won't have peace with everyone. Here it says, if possible, so far as it depends on you, live peaceably with all. Paul recognized that it's not always possible to have peace with everyone. In any relationship, you can only control yourself. You only have 50% control over how that relationship is. You can't control what anybody else does. The only actions you can control are your own. And the fact is, that's true in every relationship. When you think back to those three relationships that Peter focuses on in 1 Peter, you might notice that he's actually describing relationships that are strained. He's not describing like hunky-dory rainbows and flowers. Like, he's talking about really difficult circumstances in relationships. In 1 Peter 3, when he talks about honoring the emperor, you know who the emperor was? It was Nero. Nero was well known for being an egomaniac who murdered people who disagreed with him. Shortly after the letter of 1 Peter was written, he would blame Christians for a fire that broke out in Rome. And many of them would be subjected to violent and painful deaths. When Peter addresses servants in 1 Peter chapter 2, he specifically addresses the ones whose masters are unjust, not the ones whose masters are good and gentle. And then when he addresses wives, he writes to wives who have unbelieving husbands, who don't encourage them, don't support them in their faith. And so again, it brings us to this question. If a happy life is filled with peaceful relationships, can you be happy when your relationships are not peaceful? Can you be happy when you can't stand the man that's elected? Can you be happy when you have a jerk for a boss? Can you be happy when your marriage is difficult? Is it possible to love life and see good days when all of your relationships are strained? And the answer is yes. Because there is one relationship that supersedes them all. And in 1 Peter 3, when he quotes from Psalm 34, he gets to verse 12 and says this, "For the eyes of the Lord are on the righteous, and his ears are open to their prayer. But the face of the Lord is against those who do evil." See, Peter gives us great assurance here that no matter what your relationships are like with other people, if your relationship with the Lord is good, you can always find great satisfaction in him. And so you might be stressed about your government. You might be stressed about your job. You might be stressed about your marriage or your family or your friendships. You might not even have the relationships that you wish you had. But in any case, you can take comfort in the Lord, and you can have peace and joy all the time. You can be surrounded by chaos, and you can live in the eye of the storm. This verse reminds me of a verse in 2 Chronicles 16 in verse 9. Here, there's a seer or a prophet named Hanani, and he's speaking to Asa, who's the king of Judah. And he says, "For the eyes of the Lord run to and fro throughout the whole earth to give strong support to those whose heart is blameless toward him." Isn't that a comforting thought? The eyes of the Lord run to and fro throughout the whole earth, and he gives strong support to those whose heart is blameless toward him. If you feel like nobody else sees you, the Lord sees you. If you feel like nobody else understands you, the Lord understands you. If you feel like nobody else cares about you, the Lord cares about you. He gives strong support to those who lean hard on him. Now, this was a late addition, but I'd like to go to Psalm 34 now. I don't have a slide for it. But we've been considering what Peter says from Psalm 34 as he quotes these verses 10 through 12. And this is actually a quote from Psalm 34, verses 12 through 16. And I'd like for us to just keep reading to see what he continues to say. Brent read this for us earlier, but we can all listen to it again. The quote comes from Psalm 34 in verse 12, where he says, "What man is there who desires life and loves many good days that he may see good? Keep your tongue from evil and your lips from speaking deceit. Turn away from evil and do good. Seek peace and pursue it. The eyes of the Lord are toward the righteous and his face toward their cry." And notice how Psalm 34 continues in verse 16. "The face of the Lord is against those who do evil, to cut off the memory of them from the earth. When the righteous cry for help, the Lord hears and delivers them out of all their troubles. The Lord is near to the brokenhearted and saves the crushed in spirit. Many are the afflictions of the righteous, but the Lord delivers him out of them all. He keeps all his bones. Not one of them is broken. Affliction will slay the wicked, and those who hate the righteous will be condemned. The Lord redeems the life of his servants. None of those who take refuge in him will be condemned." What David is describing is a relationship with the Lord that can sustain us in any human relationships that we might have. He's acknowledging that if we want to have a happy life, we ought to pursue happy relationships. We would be wise to value our relationships with the people that are around us. But even if our relationships with people prove difficult, our relationship with the Lord can be a strength to us. "When the righteous cry for help, the Lord hears and delivers them out of all their troubles." We can always talk to God. We can always rest in our relationship with him. none of those who take refuge in him will be condemned. And this is what Paul calls the peace of God in Philippians chapter 4. In Philippians chapter 4, verse 4, he says, "Rejoice in the Lord always. Again, I will say rejoice. Let your reasonableness be known to everyone. The Lord is at hand. Do not be anxious about anything, but in everything, by prayer and supplication, with thanksgiving, let your request be made known to God. And the peace of God, which surpasses all understanding, will guard your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus." That is a tremendous promise for us. That no matter what is happening in your life, no matter what relationships you might have, no matter what kinds of struggles or difficulties there is peace that is accessible to you. It's a peace that transcends your circumstances. It's a peace which surpasses understanding. It's a peace that guards your heart and your mind. You can be happy no matter what's going on around you, if you will rest in your relationship with him. He talks about what we do with our anxieties here. He says, "Do not be anxious about anything, but in everything, by prayer and supplication, with thanksgiving, let your request be made known to God." Paul encourages us to cast our cares on God, much like Peter does. He says, instead of letting those things destroy you, instead of letting those things weaken you from the inside out to make you into a shell of a person, you can cast your cares on God, but he says, do it with thanksgiving. And I think that that's really important. And I think the point is that no matter what we might be anxious about, no matter what uncertainties we might be dealing with, no matter what disappointments there might be, that we can always be thankful for a relationship that will never change. At all times, we can be thankful that the most important things are certain. And regardless of any other relationship, we can have a relationship with the Almighty God through his Son, Jesus Christ. And there's peace in that that nothing else can touch. And so, with all of those thoughts in mind, I'd like to finish with the words of Jesus in Matthew chapter 10. Here, Jesus instructs his followers in verse 24. And he says, "A disciple is not above his teacher, nor a servant above his master. It is enough for the disciple to be like his teacher and the servant like his master. If they have called the master of the house Beelzebul, how much more will they malign those of his household? So have no fear of them. For nothing is covered that will not be revealed, or hidden that will not be known. What I tell you in the dark, say in the light, and what you hear whispered, proclaim on the housetops. And do not fear those who kill the body but cannot kill the soul. Rather, fear him who can destroy both soul and body in hell. Are not two sparrows sold for a penny? And not one of them will fall to the ground apart from your Father. But even the hairs of your head are all numbered. Fear not, therefore. You are of more value than many sparrows." Jesus acknowledges that all of us will face times when our relationships prove challenging. If we are the people that he's called us to be, what that means is that we will not get along with everybody. There will be people who are our enemies. And he says that even if that's the case, even if they call you Beelzebul, even if they want to take your life, don't be afraid of them, but take comfort in knowing that you matter to God. God sees every sparrow that falls, and Jesus says, you are worth a lot more than many sparrows. And so here's the takeaway for us. That if we want to take God's wisdom to heart about how to pursue happiness in life, then we ought to value our relationships. If you want to love life and see good days, invest in your relationships. That's the stuff that real life is made of. Treat people right. Be honest. Check on them. Care for them. Respond to their needs. Call your grandmother. Call your siblings. You know, invest in your relationship with your children and with your spouse, and try to get along with the people at work, and do everything that you can to have warm and healthy and satisfying relationships, and that's the way to pursue a happy life. But even if all of those things fall short of what you hoped and dreamed that they would be, take confidence in knowing that you can have a relationship with God that will always bring you joy. That's the peace of God. And whether or not you feel like you matter to anyone else, you can never, ever doubt that you matter to Him. Because He gave His Son to die on the cross for you, to make a relationship with Him possible. And so in the end, to love life, love the Lord with all your heart, soul, strength, and mind, and love your neighbor as yourself. If there's somebody here that does not have a relationship with the Lord and desires to have one, He would encourage you to come. The bride and the Spirit say come. If you need to make your life right with God, if you are willing to follow the Lord wherever He leads, and we can help you in that decision this morning, we would invite you to come to the front. Let us know while we stand together and sing.